Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of the Maryland Hoops Report podcast presented by The Left Bench. I'm your host, Brandon Simberg, and joined with me is my co-host, Noah Laufman. Noah, how's it going?
I'm great, Brandon. I'm excited to be back. This time we have an actual game to recap.
Yes.
And let's get to it.
Yeah, well, before we get to the Maryland basketball stuff on the court, I'd like to talk about some off-the-court news. Obviously, we started our podcast last week, and coincidentally, a week later, former Maryland player Andrew Terrell announced he's starting his own podcast with his brand, the Tilted Bench, I believe it's called, and it's being sponsored by Testudo Times. Noah, is Andrew Terrell trying to copy us?
I don't know. I agree. That was interesting timing, but good for Andrew, as we all remember him being on the Maryland team the last 4 years. He became famous for waving the towel. I think he's going to have a lot of good thoughts on Maryland basketball, and I recommend everyone listen to both our show and his show.
Yeah, I'll definitely be giving his show a listen. Now, onto the basketball court. There have been two games since we last spoke on Thursday. They played an exhibition game against Fayetteville State on Friday night, and they won 76-43. Then on Tuesday night, they kicked off the regular season with a 95-71 victory over Holy Cross. Noah, from between the two games, you watched both and rewatched, watching film and whatnot. What is your biggest takeaway so far?
Yeah, so it's interesting. They had this scrimmage against Fayetteville State, so a lot of people going into it were thinking, I don't know how much we should really evaluate the team based off their performance in this game. But one of the main takeaways a lot of fans, including ourselves, had after the Fayetteville State game was that Dante Scott, a freshman, looked like he will be pretty serviceable for this team and possibly a potential starter crunch time guy. And, you know, we were really looking forward to see his performance in a real game, one that counts against a Holy Cross team. And let me tell you, he played even better than he did in the exhibition in that Holy Cross game. And I would say one of my biggest takeaways from both those games was just how effective Dante Scott will be for the Terps this season on both sides of the floor.
I totally agree. And the Scott hype train, I think those around the team knew how good he would be. I would talk to guys in like April when he'd come and work out with them and play with them, and they'd be like, oh man, you know, this guy's really good. And then over the summer, I'm asking guys like, who looks good? And a common response was Dante Scott. I went to their open media day practice a couple weeks ago, and one of the biggest surprises was that he was not in the top seven guys. But I think that narrative has quickly changed as Scott played 17 minutes against Holy Cross and 19 against Fayetteville State. And he's just, every time he steps on the court, he's a threat to get you double-digit points and close to double-digit rebounds. Mm-hmm. He just plays so hard, he's so big, and he's so aggressive. What specifically about his game do you like?
Yeah, I just like his versatility on both sides of the floor. I noticed, as you said, he is a three-point threat. So whether he's the three or the four, if he's going to stand on the perimeter, teams are going to be forced to defend him out there. Ricky Lindo, the guy who started at the four for Maryland this game, was not treated the same. He often was left alone in the corner, and you had a big on Holy Cross was able to help in the paint and create more congestion for Anthony Cowan driving or Jalen Smith posting up. So on the offensive side, I think the fact that he can knock down shots is huge. And defensively, I noticed that he was also great at switching and defending multiple positions. He's 6'8". I think he can guard fours. I think he can guard threes. And, you know, I just briefly mentioned Ricky Lindo. I think that's probably been the main storyline coming out of this game, is that Ricky Lindo did start at the four for Maryland. Dante Scott, freshman, comes off the bench, has an amazing game on both sides of the floor. Will Scott be replacing Lindo in the starting lineup? Will Scott be replacing Lindo with minutes? You know, just from the first game, we already saw Scott actually played more minutes than Ricky Lindo. So, Brandon, you've been around the team for the last few weeks. You're at all the press conferences. What are you hearing about Dante Scott and Ricky Lindo's minutes?
Yeah, so Lindo has been kind of an interesting storyline to start the season. He started against Fayetteville State and only played 11 minutes. Turgeon just chalked it up to game flow and wanted to get some of the younger guys some more looks. So everyone kind of shrugged it off. And then at the media availability the day before the Holy Cross game, Turgeon made an interesting comment saying somebody took the practice off. Not literally, I think he meant figuratively, like they didn't play hard. And that would affect his starting lineup decision. Enter Friday night, and it is Lindo who gets the start, But a lot of other reporters were speculating that he might have been the guy that just took it easy and Turgeon didn't want to create waves or create ripples by benching him. Anyway, so Lindo starts the game and he plays like 4 or 5 minutes that first stint and he barely saw the floor the rest of the night. He finished with only 14 minutes and 3 points.
Yep.
And then, so after the game, I'm actually leaving the stadium. This is way past the final buzzer. Most players are already home, back at their apartments or whatnot. And I walk past Lindo walking back into the stadium. So the reporter in me thinks he might have been going back to talk to the coaching staff. But this is all speculation, obviously.
Right, right.
Not actual reporting. We're just reporting what I've seen. But in terms of off the court, I think you make a lot of great points. Scott, it seems like he's already better than Lindo, even though he's a year younger. He's certainly more physically mature, and he certainly is already a better outside shooter.
Yep.
So I'm not really sure, besides continuity and experience, which, I mean, Lindo only has a year more of experience, I'm not really sure what he brings. The good thing is that it's early season, and I think they can continue to test both guys. But right now, Dante Scott looks like the better player. You agree?
Yeah, and I saw a few times Lindo was pulled to the perimeter to guard a ball handler, and he was beat to the basket off the dribble. And, you know, Holy Cross was a great team. We'll talk about their coach in just a minute, but let's be honest. They don't really have real athletes on that team. Not the type of athletes Maryland will see during the Big Ten season, of course. So if Lindo's already getting beat by ball handlers and wings on Holy Cross, that's got to be a little concerning. And then, as you said, they input Scott into the lineup, and that just changes everything. Scott's able to defend on the ball, off the ball. And we'll see. You said it's the first game. Things might change. Ricky Lindo might look at the film, learn some things. But we'll see.
Absolutely. I think that's going to be an interesting storyline to monitor, the Lindo versus Scott, or just filling out minutes at the four in general. You know, they have a lot of different options they can do with their lineups, and we'll get to that later. One of my biggest takeaways was Jalen Smith struggling against smaller guys again. Now, neither game was on actual television.
Mm-hmm.
It was on BTN Plus. So if you're just looking at the box scores from the games, you would think Smith played okay. He had a 16-point, 11-rebound double-double against Holy Cross with 3 blocks. And against Fayetteville State, he had 10 points and 7 rebounds with 4 blocks. I'll give him credit where credit's due. He's been very good on the defensive end, stepping up in the absence of Bruno Fernando in that rim protector role. But offensively, he was 3-for-8 against Fayetteville State, which this is a Division II program, ladies and gentlemen. And Holy Cross, he got going the second half, but he was 2-for-8 in the first half, struggling to finish inside. And Holy Cross's tallest defender was like 6'8 tops. Like,
right.
they really didn't have a lot of size to guard him. So it was good to see him finish with a double-double, but I'm worried once we get to the Big Ten play and we see the Matt Harmses and the Xavier Tillmans and the Kofi Cockburns that he's going to struggle. Noah, what have you seen from Jalen Smith in the early going?
Yeah, it's a great point. A few things, and obviously Styx has been a great player for us. He was the most hyped guy coming into the season, so there are a lot of positives. I think it's important to focus on the negatives right now, especially since it's non-conference play, and we want this team and Jalen Smith to be at his best when conference play starts. So the negatives, as you said, one is his ability to guard non-bigs. So Holy Cross would routinely put him in a pick and roll, and Maryland was really aggressive all game on the pick and rolls. They would either trap the ball handler or switch, and that would leave Styx, Jalen Smith, to guard their point guard, Drew Lauder, who finished the game with 24 points, 10-19 shooting, and 3-for-6 from three. And the fact that Lauder had such a good scoring night when he was constantly facing double teams and was being guarded by Jalen Smith is a little concerning. And I did go back and watch the film and saw a handful of times where Styx, like Lindo, was pulled onto a ball handler on the perimeter and was beat to the basket. So that's something I really hope he cleans up, because Maryland will be facing a lot of good ball handlers and point guards this season. On the offensive end, I agree. I think you texted me that you thought his shot was a little broken. And in the first two games, there's been no evidence to say otherwise. Jalen Smith has not been shooting the ball well. It seems like he's fine posting up these smaller defenders, but in terms of his outside shooting, Holy Cross was letting him shoot that three ball. He was not very effective. And I would say for a guy that is this hyped and has been, you know, we've talked about he has to be the centerpiece of this team, I would be a little concerned coming into the heart of the season after watching Jalen Smith's play so far.
Absolutely. I think you brought up a great point with the defense and the switching, because he, like I said, he's done a good job underneath protecting the rim. But the switching is not important for Maryland on the court this year, but that's really something that when NBA scouts come to watch him, you know, this is a guy that people think will be a first-round pick, and right now I still believe he can be, but if he can't show the ability to switch on the perimeter and stay in front of guards on Holy Cross, much less, like, again, the Cassius Winstons and whatnot, then he's going to be in trouble. And he's 0 for 6 from 3 to start the year. A lot of looks are kind of in and out, but, you know, it's a make-or-miss game, and he hasn't made shots so far. Is there another big takeaway you've noticed from the first two games?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the defensive side of the ball. I thought Aaron Wiggins and Daryl Morsell both have been really, really good on that side of the floor. And I'm not just talking about on-ball defending. I'm not talking about Wiggins matching up with Holy Cross's three or Morsell matching up with a wing there. I'm talking about help defense. And I talked about how Maryland would be very aggressive on pick and rolls throughout the evening. So what that would create would be a lane for Morsell or Wiggins to help on that roll. And I thought they were always in the right position. And throughout the evening, I thought Maryland could depend on them to create havoc on the defensive side of the ball. They're both very switchable and versatile, unlike Jalen Smith, who we were just talking about. So I would say a lot of very encouraging things by both Maryland's main wings on the defensive side of the ball.
That's good to know. That's definitely something I didn't catch. Although if you check the box score, the two leaders in steals with three apiece from the Holy Cross game, like you said, Aaron Wiggins and Daryl Morsell. So their help side and on-ball defense is going to be really critical, because we know Morsell can be a lockdown defender, but if Wiggins can also step into that role, you know, having two elite perimeter defenders is a rarity in the Big Ten, and with so many strong offensive players, that's something that Maryland could definitely use if they want to finish atop the conference. Another thing I took away from the first two games is that it's just going to be hard to find minutes for everybody. You know, we talked about how Lindo's minutes have gone down, or Lindo's minutes haven't been as expected. You know, Cyril Smith Jr. has had a decent first two games. He was the only player to make a three-pointer in the first half against Holy Cross. You know, he ended up playing 16 minutes. Makai and Raquel Mitchell combined for roughly 13 to 14. I think throughout the year, Makai will just swallow Raquel's minutes and those become his. But then you look at the starters, and last year Colin averaged 34 minutes a game. He only played 29 against Holy Cross. You got to imagine in a closer game, those minutes are going to go up. Ayala averaged 29 minutes a game last year. And again, in closer games, you have to imagine those minutes are going to go up. Same with Sticks, same with Wiggins. So my concern is, how is Turgeon going to be able to find everybody playing time? You know, like Dante Scott, like we mentioned, or Sorrell Smith, who I was very critical of him last year, but he's been pretty good through two games.
Yeah, it's a great point, and I think Maryland's at a very nice place as a program to have this much depth. I saw a lot of people comparing this year's team to the 2015 team. We talked about that last show. With that team had a lot of hype coming into the season, but I really think what separates Mark Turgeon's 2019 squad from his 2015 squad is the depth. I don't think Maryland has had this kind of depth at all in Mark Turgeon's 9 years, but with depth comes problems sometimes. You have a lot of really good, talented players on this team. We're talking four-star guys. We're talking guys who got minutes last year, as you said, Cyril Smith. Will these guys be able to find as many minutes as they want on this team? And if they don't, how will they be able to handle that throughout the season? We don't know. I mean, do you have any idea? As somebody who's been around basketball for a while, you've played at the high level in high school, AAU, have friends playing D1 right now in the NBA, you've probably seen this problem occur, whether it was on your team or other teams before. How do players usually handle that?
I mean, I think a good coach will not stick to a like minute plan or minute restriction. Like, you kind of give, you have nine really talented players. I think you throw them all out there, give them their chance or their stint. And then the second half, I think it's important to roll with your best five guys. Which five players are giving you the best chance to win? Not like throughout the season, but on this one particular night. So I'm going to be interested to see if Turgeon is willing to, Aaron Wiggins having an off shooting night and Eric Ayala is playing a lot better, or Morsell's playing a lot better, like, will he send Aaron Wiggins to the bench? Or if Dante Scott is pressing the issue, is he gonna feel comfortable riding Dante Scott in crucial minutes? That, I think, for me, is the biggest thing I want to see from Turgeon, because you don't want to just be complacent and stick to just these five guys and drill these five guys. And last year they didn't have those choices. Like, they really were like seven deep in crucial games, and that obviously affects how you substitute. But this year with nine guys, I'd like to see him play a lot more.
Yeah, totally. And I think as the season progresses and we see different teams and different matchups, that this team has a lot of versatility from a lineup standpoint. You could see lineups that are bigger or smaller, and I think it will depend on who Maryland is playing. In fact, we'll get to this at the end of the show, but they play a Rhode Island team that's constructed in a pretty interesting way, and we'll see what kind of lineup Turgeon wants to throw out there at the start or end of that game to combat Rhode Island style of play.
Absolutely. So now let's jump into some X's and O's. You know, Noah, you went back and watched the film, and you texted me some pretty interesting things about the game. So what did you see from Brett Nelson's Holy Cross offense that gave the Terps some problems? You know, they allowed 71 points.
Yeah, they allowed 71 points, and I sent you some clips. I thought they left some points on the table, meaning I thought Holy Cross had a lot of open looks throughout the evening that they just couldn't get to knock down. And I talked about this briefly when we were discussing Daryl Morcell's help defense, and that because Maryland was so aggressive on those pick and rolls and would often trap the ball handler, there was opportunity for the wings and bigs to create openings on the floor and get wide open threes. And actually what I noticed Coach Nelson started to do throughout the game was, instead of having his big fully set a screen in a pick and roll, what he would do is have the big act like he was setting a screen and slip it, which would allow him to have more of a leeway to the basket and would force Anthony Cowan, who would be switching with Jalen Smith, to guard this big. Because if it was just a pick and roll and there was no slip, it would create more congestion, time for, you know, Cowan to recover or Sticks to recover, and maybe they don't switch it. But because they slipped, there was more of an urgency to switch right away for Maryland. So what I noticed is Cowan would routinely have to switch on the big who would slip the screen, and that would either create a mismatch down low where you had 6 foot Cowan guarding 6'8" player on Holy Cross, or it would force a guy like Daryl Morcell to help off the wing and then have a wide open three on the corner or in the wing. And I saw Holy Cross do that throughout the evening and actually miss a lot of open threes from that type of play throughout the night.
Yeah, I think this is something that Mark Turgeon also recognized and agreed with. He started his press conference after the game. Nobody even asked about it. He just said that he thinks Brett Nelson is one of the best coaches in the Patriot League. So he was clearly impressed with the schemes. And I agree. Holy Cross got a lot of open shots, and they're just not as talented, so they didn't happen to make as many. But I thought they had a terrific game plan coming into this. In Turgeon's defense, and he did say this multiple times, they didn't have a ton of film on the Crusaders. You know, it's a brand new coach, a lot of new players, and he said they actually had to watch Marquette film from last year because that is where Brett Nelson came from. So they watched a lot of those sets. But he said it was really hard to game plan and diagram for that kind of offense. So hopefully this isn't a trend for the rest of the year. Most of the teams they play should have some continuity from the previous season. But I will give credit to Brett Nelson and Holy Cross. I
think
they did a terrific job. Offensively, what'd you see from the Terps on that end?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. I thought overall it was a successful night. And Mark Turgeon said that as well, because not only did they have to defend this unique Holy Cross offense, but on the offensive side of the floor for Maryland, they had to go against a zone defense at times and a man-to-man defense. So that gave them a lot of practice on how to execute different defensive schemes and go against that. I noticed that they would routinely try to have Jalen Smith in space on a one-on-one situation. So they would spread out, let Sticks attack. That is a great idea, right? You have one of the best athletes in the country. You want Jalen Smith playing in space, playing in a one-on-one situation as much as possible. And similar to how Holy Cross actually left a lot of points on the table, Maryland did score 95 points, but they were 5-for-27 from three. And I saw especially a lot of out-of-bounds plays that would create wide-open corner threes for Aaron Wiggins, just miss, miss, miss. So, you know, very interesting. I don't know how to feel about Maryland's horrible shooting the last two games. I mean, this is a team that has elite three-point shooters, and they're just not making their shots. And I'm wondering how you feel about that.
So I think with Wiggins, because I was watching closely, because he missed some wide-open shots, and he's the best shooter on this team. And to me, it looked like he was kind of aiming the ball and not really just like shooting it. And as a self-proclaimed shooter, I've been there. You know, when you start to miss a few shots, it gets in your head, especially the more wide open ones, you start to overthink. So I wouldn't plan on Aaron Wiggins going 0 for 6 from 3 again. If Colin was 0 for 3 himself, again, we know he's a better shooter than that. Although I will say, I think overall in college basketball, percentages will be down this year. For the uninformed, they moved the three-point line back a little bit to, I think, the FIBA rules, is that?
Yeah.
To the FIBA three-point line, international basketball. And so it is a little farther out, and so I do think percentages will drop, but you can't expect 5 out of 27 from Maryland every night. I think they'll pick it up. Another reason I think they scored a lot more points is because they pushed the pace.
Totally.
I wrote this in my post-game article, but last year they attempted 52 shots per game, and against Holy Cross, they attempted 77. So if you're shooting the ball 25 more times, you're obviously going to get more points. I don't think they'll play at this pace all year. I think a lot of that was a reflection of Holy Cross also playing fast, and I just think night one, there's a lot of energy, yeah, a lot of excitement to go. But I do think in general, Maryland will play faster than last year. Did you like the pace that they played?
Totally, and I think we talked about it on the first show that Maryland's struggled a lot in the half court last year. And if you look at a lot of the games they lost, Wisconsin, Purdue, teams that slowed the pace down, Nebraska in the Big Ten tournament, Maryland is at their best when they can run and show their athleticism and create one-on-one transition opportunities. And as long as they can continue to play, in my opinion, I would just keep this style all season. I think this is the best way to play basketball for Maryland. And when they slow it down, that's when it tends to become problematic for them. Maybe this year will be different. Maybe these players are more experienced and they'll figure out a way to better navigate the half court. But I just think, especially in the Big Ten, who has a more athletic team than Maryland? Nobody, right? So if that's the truth, I think you got to take advantage of that. And the best way to do that is playing fast.
Yeah, they have the athleticism to play fast. And like we mentioned earlier, they have the depth. You know, Anthony Collin, he's going to push the ball more. He doesn't need to play 34 minutes. You can drop that off by a couple.
Yep.
Eric Ayala, he doesn't need to play 29 minutes. You want those guys to be playing at 100% speed when they're on the court. So if they need more of a break, I think they have the depth to do so. I agree. I really like the pace of play. As a fan, it's just more appealing to watch. I mean,
totally.
More transitions, more fast breaks, more dunks.
Yeah, I watched after that Maryland Holy Cross game. I went home and saw Wisconsin St. Mary's.
Oh God! Oh.
Complete opposite. It was brutal. I think both teams shot in the 30s percentage wise. It was like 52-52 going into overtime. I mean, and again, Maryland was able to. Maryland was slowed down by Wisconsin and all those other Big Ten teams last year. And I wonder this year, with more experience and better athletes, will they be able to combat those teams that like to slow it down, like Wisconsin? We'll just have to wait and see.
Absolutely. When they play Wisconsin, it is definitely going to be a clash of styles. All right, I'm glad you actually brought up Wisconsin, because uh-huh. Now we're going to jump to our next segment where we look at results around the Big Ten. It's been two nights now, so most teams have had at least a game. Noah, is there any result or any game that stuck out to you in these first two nights?
Two results. Illinois going to overtime against Nicholls State. Nicholls State or just Nicholls?
I think it's just Nicholls.
Nicholls. And then Nebraska losing by 19 at home to UC Riverside in Fred Hoiberg's Big Ten coaching debut. Man, I think we should focus more on Illinois just because I believe most people thought Nebraska was going to be the worst team in the Big Ten this year or the mm-hmm. second worst. So as far as Illinois goes, that's a team that we both agreed coming into the year would be a top of the half Big Ten team, tournament team for sure. And I just don't know how much to take away from that result, going to overtime, struggling as much as they did against Nicholls. What do you think about Illinois?
Absolutely. I didn't get a chance to watch the game, and I do want to go back and rewatch it on BTN Plus at some point, just because it was an eye-opening result. But I would be a little concerned if I was a Fighting Illini fan. I think everyone was just seemingly penciling them in as a tournament team, and I know they brought a lot of guys back. I know Io DeSumo was an NBA player, but it's just hard to trust a team that lost over 20 games last year
right.
and is continually, for lack of a better word, been a losing program. So I think it is really concerning that they played so close with Nicholls. Another interesting note from their team is that sophomore forward Tevian Jones, who was a four-star top 100 kid coming in. He barely played last year because of suspensions. He was recently suspended for academic probation, and they were already short on wing depth as it is. Like, I like their top six guys, but, man, their depth is just not that good. And they're another team that likes to play fast. Like, I would be concerned about them. I guess the good thing, or bad thing if you're an Illinois fan, is that they have two crucial games coming up this weekend. They're at Grand Canyon on Friday night, who Grand Canyon's not a great team or anything, but
no, they actually lost to a Division II team.
They did, but it's a really tough place to play.
Totally.
Crazy environment. And then Sunday night, 8 p.m., unfortunately on the Pac-12 network, I'm going to try to stream it, but they play a ranked Arizona team, so this is a huge weekend for Illinois basketball.
Absolutely, and you brought up a great point about, are we penciling in programs like Illinois who have been traditional losers with coaches who have not really succeeded in the Big Ten, at least with Underwood?
Mm-hmm.
Are we making a mistake by saying because Illinois is Ayodele Osamunu and we like their roster that we'll just expect them to make this jump? We said the same thing about Penn State, and I'm wondering, are we making a mistake and should we just be trusting the infrastructure and coaching of some of these teams that might not be as talented, but like Fran McCaffrey in Iowa, Greg Gard, Wisconsin, Michigan, obviously not with John Beilein anymore, but a program with good coaching, Juwan Howard, they have Phil Martelli as their assistant. I mean, I think you see what I'm getting at is, mm-hmm. A lot of people looked at the Big Ten coming into this year and said, this is going to be the year where you're going to have a lot of programs who haven't done anything or made the tournament, be in the top half this year. Illinois, Penn State, I've even heard Rutgers. What do you think about that?
No, I agree. That's a really fair point. It's hard to trust programs that haven't done it before. And yes, these teams have one or two guys that we may like, or even a deeper roster that we may like, but if they haven't done it before and won the Big Ten consistently, like a Greg Gard, like a Matt Painter, or just like a Michigan program that's constantly winning games, it is tough to trust. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing how Illinois handles somewhat of adversity these next two games. For me, I end up catching the second half of the Michigan State-Kentucky game on Tuesday night, sorry, I guess, after Maryland Holy Cross.
Yep.
And the Spartans will lose a close one to Kentucky, who even is the number two ranked team, so if you're a Michigan State fan, I'm not pounding the alarm. But they're another team where people weren't penciling them in to be the national champion, but they were the pretty consensus heavy favorite. Most experts I saw had picked them to be in the Final Four. And after watching that game, I think losing Josh Langford, who on the last podcast, I said I'm not sure he's going to come back. And then Izzo comes out that week and says he's not sure he's going to come back either. Losing their second best player, like if that happened in Maryland, if they lost J.O. Smith or Anthony Cowan, like, that's a big deal. I think that flew under the radar. And the loss of Matt McQuaid and Kenny Goins from last year, I think these were actually these weren't appreciated enough. And I don't think Michigan State is quite as good. I know they have Cassius Winston, but I haven't seen a huge jump from Aaron Henry yet, which everyone was assuming, and same with Xavier Tillman. So Michigan State, I think they look beatable. After that result, do you think now Maryland has a better chance to take them down and maybe be the best team?
I really do. I think as we've seen how well Wiggins and Morsell have played on the defensive side, I expect Maryland to defend Michigan State in a similar way that we've seen how they've defended point guards so far, which is they're going to be really aggressive and they're going to trap. So that's going to put Cassius Winston in a position to find open guys, which he will. He's a phenomenal point guard, but I trust our wing depth enough to switch and play defense on Michigan State's wings, and I agree. I mean, I just thought watching that Kentucky game, the biggest takeaway I had was maybe this is just as simple as Michigan State's not as talented as we think. We go up and down the roster, Cassius Winston, Aaron Henry, Xavier Tillman, and we're like, phenomenal college guys, high IQ, experience. You know what? It's still basketball. Like, if you're more athletic and more talented like Kentucky was, it might just be that simple. And Michigan State's going to have a phenomenal year because they're so well coached, because they're so experienced. But I'm wondering what you think about that sentiment. And when it comes to the Maryland matchup, we said at the beginning of the podcast, who's more talented? Who's more athletic than us in the Big Ten? I don't think it's Michigan State. I don't think it's anybody.
I agree. Like, actually watching that game, I'm like, oh, like, Foster Lawyer is getting more minutes than I expected. Or, oh, Thomas Kithier is now starting for this team. I just, people were just expecting a leap from Henry, a leap from Tillman, a leap from Marcus Bingham, who did nothing. And Rocket, well, that's a freshman I like.
It was a tough first game.
He got in foul trouble, but like they actually are relying on more unknowns than I think people realize. And Izzo is a great player development guy. We might be having a way different conversation in January, but off of a first glance, I agree that Maryland might actually be more talented.
Yeah, and I think that's why there's such high expectations in College Park this season, because a lot of people have just looked at the other Big Ten rosters and looked at Maryland's roster and has made the point that we have a talent edge. And that's not something that just fans are saying. I saw Aaron Wiggins talk about this preseason in multiple interviews, that he thinks we are like one of the most talented teams in the country. Like, the players know that they're talented, and they believe that they can go head-to-head with anyone.
Absolutely. One last Big Ten result I want to throw out there. I caught the second half of Ohio State-Cincinnati last night. Shout out to Cincinnati. They get a new coach.
Yep.
They have one of the top players in the country in Jared Cumberland. And so everyone's like, oh, this is the year Cincinnati learns how to play offense and be a good offensive team. Nope. That game was really ugly. Not fun to watch. I need that like hour of my life back. but in terms of Ohio State, they did score for like the first like 6.5 minutes and still managed to win the game, put up 45 points in the second half. They're also a pretty deep team. They have a lot of guys that they can throw out at you. And I was really impressed with freshman point guard DJ Carton. He was getting a lot of hype in the preseason, but he really lived up to it last night,
yep.
Wednesday night, with some big takes in the second half and got to the free throw line at the end of the game. And if that guy continues to get better, Ohio State is going to be a team that scares me going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, we talked about it on the first show that they were even like a surprise Final Four contender. I think Ohio State will be right in the mix with Michigan State and Maryland as the top teams in the Big Ten this year. I want to revisit a point you made about the three-point line really quickly, because I've been looking at these results as, you know, I just looked at the Michigan State statistics, just looked at Ohio State, saw the Maryland game. All these teams are just missing like a ridiculous rate from the three-point line. You know, like less than 20% we're talking. This could be a really interesting trend that you're bringing up, that a lot of people are missing here, that because the line has moved back, that we might see a lot of missed threes, at least in the first game, for these really elite programs with phenomenal athletes and shooters like Michigan State, like Ohio State, like Maryland, that they're missing at a really, really high rate.
Yeah, totally. I also think that some of that is early season stuff, yeah. Like working out the kinks or whatnot. But I do agree. I think in general, 3-point percentages in college basketball are going to naturally go down this year, and that's, like you said, something to keep monitoring as we move forward. Before we move to talking about the Rhode Island game, just any Big Ten fans out there, I mentioned both Illinois games. Those are both games worth monitoring this weekend. And Saturday night, right before Maryland tips off against Rhode Island, Texas plays Purdue in what should be a pretty good game on FS1. So any Big Ten fans and any Maryland fans, I would recommend checking out that game. Now let's move on to Rhode Island. They're also 1-0. They beat LIU Brooklyn 76-65 in their opener. They did not make the tournament last year, but they made it 2 years ago and beat a Trae Young-led Oklahoma team. But even though they didn't make the tournament last year, they returned 5 starters and forward, sorry if I mispronounced this, Cyril Langevin is a preseason first team All-Atlantic 10 guy. Noah, in terms, what are you looking for Saturday night?
Yeah, I mean, well, we're looking at a team that depends a lot on their starters. They're not like Maryland, they're not as deep. I'm looking at that game against LIU right now. You had most starters play over 32 minutes. You had Doughton and Russell play 35 and 36 minutes. So one thing that I would consider is, I mean, and it's easier said than done, but getting some of these guys in foul trouble. Force Rhode Island to go to their bench, a place that they're not as comfortable going to. But yeah, we don't. Langevin, I think is how you pronounce it.
Okay.
He had a great night, 16 points, 15 boards. I believe he's only 6'8", but he's thick. So I think that's still going to be an interesting matchup for Jalen Smith. And I'd love to see how he performs on the glass in that matchup.
I'm also interested in watching the backcourt matchup. Rhode Island has two experienced backcourt guys, as you mentioned, Fats Russell and Jeff Doughton in the backcourt. Fun fact, Fats Russell was high school teammates with Maryland's own Dante Scott. But Russell and Doughton also were on that team that beat Oklahoma 2 years ago in the tournament. So those are two guys who have big game experience, and I don't think they're going to be scared coming into the Xfinity Center on Saturday night. Another name to watch is Jacob Toppin, who he had 11 points and 7 rebounds off the bench for Rhode Island. He's a freshman, and he's the younger brother of Obi Toppin, who is Dayton's best player right. and a potential first-round pick. So in terms of Rhode Island, the Rhode Island game, I'm definitely going to be watching the matchup in the backcourt. Fats Russell is a talented defender, so I'm interested to see how him and Callen match up. In terms of Maryland, what are you looking for from them? What do you want them to improve on from the Holy Cross game?
Well, so Rhode Island starts 3 guards. And as you said, Russell's actually a smaller guy, listed at 5'10". So overall, Maryland's going to have a size advantage. And this is a team that we saw in Maryland kind of get dominated on the boards against Fayetteville State, against a Division II team with a good 7-footer. So I'd love to see Maryland impose their size on this Rhode Island team. And I think, yeah, the big things Maryland should be watching for are making open threes, you know. Andrew Wiggins, Aaron Wiggins.
I won't trust Andrew Wiggins to make an open
three. It was only a matter of time before I was going to mess it up. But, yeah, can Aaron Wiggins bounce back from his 0-for-6 performance? We know those looks will be there. I'd love it for Maryland to dominate this team. I really would. I don't think this Rhode Island team is particularly good. Certainly not the Rhode Island teams that we've seen in the past with Bobby Hurley as their coach, who's now at UConn. And I've talked to some guys that – I talked to one guy, actually, who used to play on this Rhode Island team who I met I was working at the Wizards game this week. And for what it's worth, he said he's not very impressed with this team and does not have high expectations. So
I will say, though, this – you know, Atlantic 10, it's not like the Ivy League where you probably only get one team in. Like, you can get in as a major, but for Rhode Island, like, this is almost like their Super Bowl.
Totally.
Their biggest game. If they can win this game, that looks great on their resume. For Maryland, you talked about can they use their size advantage. So I'm interested to see how Turgeon plays with the lineups. The jumbo lineup, as I'm calling it, where you slide Jalen Smith to the 4 with one of the Mitchell twins. They were +5 in 5 minutes against Fayetteville State, but Turgeon did not deploy that lineup against Holy Cross. On the opposite side of that, the 4-guard lineup, I'm calling it the 4 horsemen for now, working out a better nickname, but they were +2 in 6 minutes against Holy Cross, so which isn't great, but you know if Rhode Island's going to play small, maybe we counter that by just, or Maryland counters that by playing equally small, but just having better players. Against Holy Cross, when they went to that small lineup, they played 3-2 zone, which we talked about the zone in the preseason. It didn't look great in the half court, and they, you know, zone with only 2 guys on the block, they were giving up some rebounds down low. What'd you see from the zone the past 2 games?
I was a little confused at why we went to it, to be honest, because I thought we were playing pretty well on the defensive side. I remember I was with some friends watching in the crowd, and I was like, is Turgeon doing this just to practice zone? And I think the answer has to be yes, because they were less effective playing zone than man. So I don't know. Do you think it was just like Turgeon using this game as a trial and error?
I think it was because he was playing that smaller lineup with more solid before. For the uninformed, the 4 horsemen group is the 4 like guards: uh-huh. Anthony Callen, Eric Ayala, Aaron Wiggins, Daryl Morcel, and then either Jalen Smith or one of the Mitchell twins at the 5. But it was actually when they played that smaller group.
Yeah.
So I think Turgeon thought maybe that's their best chance to succeed with that group. But I don't know. You know, Morcel is such a good on-ball defender. And Wiggins, totally. We talked about, is such a good on-ball defender. If you just have those 4 guys switch everything on the perimeter, why would you not have that group playing man?
Yeah, it's a great point. One other thing I want to talk about with Maryland, we talked about already the lack of 3-point shooting. I would say, isn't this an encouraging thing, though, that Maryland struggled so much from behind the arc and they still put up 95 points and they still had an effective offense? Because I think so often in college basketball, we see teams live and die by the 3, and I think Maryland has proved so far, yes, it's early, yes, the competition has not been great, that this is a team that can win in multiple ways, and if the 3 ball's not falling, or mid-range shots even aren't falling, they are capable of getting baskets in the paint and winning without having to make a lot of 3s. What do you think about that?
I think that's a great point. And another thing that they did better on the offensive end, you know, in our preview show, we talked about turning the ball over less. Only 8 turnovers with more possessions against Holy Cross.
That's really impressive.
And They turned the ball over 6 times against Fayetteville State. So I think that's another reason they've been so successful on offense. They've been taking care of the ball. And like you said, they can score in multiple ways, not just three-point shooting. So, I mean, if there's three-point shooting, which it will get better. If it can get, like, significantly better, they're going to be tough to stop.
I could see. Yeah, again, 95 points. That's, considering how bad we shot, is incredibly impressive. And your point about the turnovers, I remember it was everyone in the country was mocking Maryland throughout conference play last year because they went on this incredible run where they lost the turnover battle every game. I believe it might have even lasted the whole regular season for them. If not, it ended towards the very, very end of the regular season in Big Ten play. So they were, you know, turning the ball over like at sometimes like almost 20 times a game. Even at a slower rate, with less possessions, still finding ways to win, which is impressive in itself. But if this team can take care of the ball, like you're talking about, you know, all of what we've seen so far, to the biggest takeaway is that there's a lot of things Maryland fans should be happy about.
Absolutely. There's been a lot of hype in the preseason. And again, it's been one exhibition game and one regular season game. But so far, they've lived up to it, and they've looked really good. So... Are you going to the game Saturday? Will you be there Saturday?
I unfortunately am going to miss it because I'm working a Capital City Go-Go game.
Okay.
So, like the Fayetteville State game, I already have it set to record. I'm going to come home after my Go-Go game and watch it, which will be interesting because it will be good to have a perspective of inside the stadium versus watching on film. I'm going to attend the next couple games after that, though, so that'll be good.
Sounds good. And then for me, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Simberg. I will have a preview story coming out around the time this podcast probably comes out, and I will also have a post-game story and updates from inside the stadium. Noah, thanks for joining me again. This was a lot of fun.
Yep. Looking forward to doing it again next week.
Sounds good.